This is The Trend, and I'm your host, Cass Harrington. Before we get you jazzed up for Franklin Street, here's a roundup of this week's local news. The calendar flips from February to March this weekend, but the tri-state is still bracing for more winter weather. The National Weather Service has issued a winter storm watch for the Evansville area. It's in effect from Sunday morning through early Monday. Forecasters are predicting freezing rain, sleet, and snow in the area, mainly north and west of a line from New Madrid, Missouri to Rockport, Indiana. Icing is more likely to close to the Ohio River, while heavier amounts of snow are expected north of the tri-state. Many Evansville bars and private clubs are staying smoke-free, despite a court ruling that overturned the city's ban. WNIN's John Gibson has more.
Of the 28 bars that sued the city to overturn the 2012 smoking ban, at least 13 have opted to stay smoke-free. Steve Alsop is president of the Vandenberg County Tavern Owners Association and owner of the Peephole Bar and Grill on Main Street. He says the Peep is returning to a smoke-free policy after 2 weeks of allowing indoor smoking. He tells the Evansville Courier and Press that it was a business decision that several bars have made.
There's been a tolerance developed on the smoker's side to go outside. They've also, a lot of them, spent a lot of money on outdoor smoking areas to make it more convenient for the smokers. And so it's, that they've made that investment and it's working for them, and so that's the way they want to go.
Of the 8 private clubs that filed suit, at least 6 are smoke-free. Meantime, the Tavern Owners Association is attempting to recoup losses from the smoking ban. John Gibson, WNIN News.
The Evansville-Vandenberg County Emergency Management Agency now has a full-time director. Fire Department District Chief Cliff Weaver has been named to the post after serving as interim co-director with Police Captain Andy Chandler. Weaver and Chandler have led the agency since Mayor Winicky asked former director Sherman Greer to step down. Vandenberg County Commissioners have approved plans to continue a renovation of the old courthouse. WNIN's John Gibson has details.
The county renovated the first floor of the historic downtown courthouse last year. Commission President Joe Kiefer tells the Evansville Courier and Press this year the fix-up will move to the second floor.
We're going to refurbish the corridors and the governor's parlor, and we're going to repair the walls, patch and repair walls, paint, and then we're going to repair the wainscoting, the marble floors and the marble tiles on the wall. Some of it's missing. We're going to repair and patch that.
Kiefer says the project will cost $21,000 and will be paid for by the Old Courthouse Foundation. He calls it an inexpensive way to drastically improve the appearance of the old courthouse interior. John Gibson, WNIN News.
State regulators want Southern Indiana phone customers to start dialing 10 digits. Beginning this weekend, regulators are asking customers in the 812 area code to add the area code to the beginning of the number. In other words, 555-1234 would become 812-555-1234. The change is needed to add a new area code to the region, 930, because the 812 code is running out of available numbers. 7-digit calls will go through until September, but officials hope you'll get into the 10-digit habit before then. That's your local news. Stay with me for The Trend.
I'm going back and try to find a wife. Gonna settle down, gonna settle down, gonna settle down in my own home.
Support comes from Raven Tire and Auto Service, a proud sponsor of WNIN programming. Raven's trained technicians provide complete auto service, including brakes, alignment, oil and lube, and all recommended maintenance, along with tire brands like Michelin and Goodyear. Information available on the web at raventire.com. Support also comes from Evansville Day School, partnering with parents to offer a student-centered education program for students junior pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. More information at evansvilledayschool.org or at 812-476-3039.
I'm going back and try to settle down. Gonna settle down, gonna settle down, gonna settle down.
You're listening to The Trend. I'm Cass Harrington. In this first segment, I wanted to dive into the lore surrounding Franklin Street. I can see, with Mardi Gras coming up, some parallels with Bourbon Street, the history, the industrial nature of it, kind of the grittiness, but there's charm. There's a historic quality. And if you heard the first segment of The Trend I hosted, you know, businesses like Lamasco's Bar has almost a haunted a narrative behind it. So I'm going to talk with a storyteller and author, Mary Jo Huff, about her memories of Franklin Street when she was a child in the 1950s. Let's take a listen.
So what's your Hagedorn story?
Oh, well, I have a couple of.
Okay. Let's hear it.
Well, when I was a little girl, my mom and my daddy moved from Harriet Street in Evansville to Darmstadt. And being on Harriet Street was a big deal, but not today if you go there. Berry Plastics has a parking lot there. And ironically, I drove by there the day that the wrecking ball was taking the 222 Tavern down. That's on Franklin Street. Not the piece of Franklin Street where my granddaddy had his tavern. His tavern was at 10th Avenue in Franklin Street. It was called Hagedorn's Tavern. And he started that tavern as a young man, as a father, with children. They had children. I had a step-grandmother because my grandmother had passed away. And my mama says that she started working in the tavern at 17. But then when we moved to Darmstadt, we thought we'd really, really, really move to a different place in the world. But it was just down St. Joe Avenue. Wasn't a big deal. So when we moved to Darmstadt, my parents did not look around to see what schools were available. They stuck me on a yellow bus, and I rode that bus into Evansville. And the bus dropped me off at St. Joe Avenue, right just a block from Franklin Street, and I had to walk to St. Boniface Elementary School. Well, my mama made arrangements with my granddaddy over at the tavern that I could go over there for lunch every day. But it was kind of a, you know, going down the street, I can remember as a child just thinking, oh my gosh, I was there for first, second, and third grades. And so Mr. Teepool down at the drugstore on Franklin Street, he let me cut through the drugstore. And that was a big deal. I'd go in the back door and out the front door and go down to Hagedorn's for lunch. Of course, I wasn't of age, and it was a tavern, so I had to go in the back door. I would sit in there on a stool. They had a big high stool that sat by a table, and the table had like linoleum on the top of it. And the cooks were always busy. Today, I probably would think I was a nuisance, but back then I didn't think I was. I thought it was really important that I came to lunch. But there was a pickle jar. It was a 5-gallon pickle jar, and it had sliced pickles in it. I loved pickles. I've always been a chubby little girl. I was chubby as a child, and I'm still chubby as an adult. And so I'll just sit there and look at that pickle jar and eat whatever they gave me for lunch. And one day I thought, I got to get some pickles out of that pickle jar. And I waited till the cooks had turned their back. And I unscrewed the top, had a big old gold screw top on it, and I unscrewed it. And I reached down in there with my hand, and I grabbed a handful of them pickles. And I thought, what in the world am I going to do with them? So I put them in my pocket, and I was going to take them back to school. Had no idea that those pickles were going to drip clean down into my shoes and my socks. And you know what? I didn't think about the smell because I was sitting there with them. But evidently, when I went back, other people could smell those pickles that had drained down through my pockets. Every time I see a sliced pickle, even on a sandwich, I go all the way back to that big pickle jar that was sitting there. And you know, at Hagedorn's, they had a bird. It was a white cockatiel, but that bird could talk. And sometimes its language wasn't very presentable for children. And so over the years, it was a big joke with us as kids when we'd go down to Grandpa's and go to the tavern and we'd have dinner. My family would go in there lots of times for fried chicken, and we weren't allowed to go talk to that bird. My mom would say, don't you go up there at that bird. Stay right back here at this table. Don't you go up there at that bird. And when we were kids coming from Darmstadt, we would come in on Saturday, and my mom and my daddy would go to the grocery store. There was a grocery store right across the street. It was Jerry's Market. Today it's a parking lot. And we would go down to the Franklin Theater. It cost 25 cents to go to the movie, and you'd go down there, and and you'd see a full-length movie, and then you'd get all the little extra things that came with it, and you could stay there all afternoon for a quarter. And when we finished at the movie, it was always daylight. I always remembered that because I kind of had a fear of the dark. And so I was always glad that when we came out of that dark theater that it was daylight outside, because myself and my brother and sister, they're twins, we would then walk down to Hagedorn's where my mom and my daddy would be. I never realized why my mama always drove home. My daddy always drove into town to go to the grocery, but my mama always drove home. Of course, as an adult, I can figure that out. My daddy'd been sitting there at Hagedorn's for just a little bit. All of those things are wonderful memories that lasted for years, because I went to Modern Day High School, rode that yellow bus, made lots of friends, friends whose relationships have lasted over 50 years. I find myself going back and connecting with those people from back in those days. We used to stand down on that median in Franklin Street. I can remember we were helping raise money for some nonprofit something. And we'd had a slumber party the night before. I won't mention any names. And we had smoked cigars, little skinny cigars. And the next morning, we had to go sell Tootsie Rolls and stand in that median on Franklin Street. And at the red lights, we were going to sell those Tootsie Rolls. Three of us were so sick the next morning because we had puffed on those cigars that we could hardly stand on that median. So when I drive down Franklin Street, do I think about those things? Sure, I think about those things. We used to play in the park across the street at the West Side Library. So when I see kids out there in that park, it thrills me to think that people are still going to that library. People still care about their kids being outside. So my memories of Franklin Street go way back to fall festivals that are so old that many of us aren't around anymore. But you know, all of those memories are what make our stories important.
Mary Jo, that was so great. That was amazing.
I just go on and on.
Oh, my gosh. How do you do that? How do you do that? Have you written that down?
Actually, I do children's stories. Uh-huh. I'm on Corpus Christi tonight.
But your cadence and the way you tell it is so beautiful.
It's going back in your memory bank, and being able to visualize, like I could feel walking through T-Pool's drugstore. Mm-hmm. And I could think about going in the back door. And that pickle jar, I was serious about that. Anytime I open a sandwich and there are pickles, I go, oh my gosh. And so that's what you do. You go back into that memory bank and you grab those pieces.
The sensory things. Mm-hmm. 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 I'm melting. I could sit here forever. It's wonderful. So you said in your stories, there were several woven in there, that you are happy to see parents bringing their children back to that playground and things are still going on. Do you prefer the Franklin of your childhood, or are you pleased by what's going on right now?
Well, actually, I don't think the look of Franklin Street has changed that much, except for the buildings that have been torn down, the Jerry's Markets on the corner across from Hagedorn's, and the hardware store Catacorner that's now the Gerst House, and other businesses that have come in and gone out. The actual facial look of Franklin Street is not all that different. I think that what they're doing for the Mardi Gras thing is wonderful. I think anything they can do to get people to go down there, to get people to invest in that part of town. I get tickled. I moved to Newburgh when we first got married. My husband got a job at Alcoa, and it was nonsensical to live anywhere else but in Newburgh. And so when we moved to Newburgh, my friend called one day and she said, well, I'm getting ready to put my lunch in my little satchel to come up to Newburgh. And I said, you're what? I've got a refrigerator. She said, oh, no, it's a long trip. She was dead serious. Dead serious. And of course, when the expressway opened,
way out to Newburgh.
Way out to Newburgh. And I didn't even live up in Newburgh. I lived across from Angel Mountain. So I wasn't up in Newburgh or out near the stripper pits or close to Boonville. I was right on the Evansville line. But for them, that was a big deal. And I go to the west side. Tracy Zeller's my jeweler. She does everything. I just run out there. Mm-hmm. I don't think about it. I just run out there. And one of my best friends lives out there. Another friend moved to Mount Vernon. So it's a lot. Times have changed. But Franklin Street has basically stayed the same. The West Side Library still looks the same. My aunt lived in one of the shotgun houses behind the library. They're all those houses are still there. You know, the back streets are still the same. St. Boniface is still there. Not quite the same school, but basically the same. And so if you drive down those back streets, visually it hasn't changed a whole lot.
Wow.
Of course, I don't think they drop kids off down at the corner at St. Joe Avenue to walk all the way down to St. Boniface. I'm sure of that.
I don't know about many kids sitting in a tavern for lunch at school.
Probably not today. Somebody would raise some question about that. But back then, it didn't matter. And my granddaddy, he was an ornery old thing.
Is he German?
He was very German. Hagedorn is very German. Uh-huh. In fact, his parents did not speak English. And my mama used to say when they would work in the garden and stuff that they always spoke German so that the kids didn't know what they were saying. Well, as they got older, they understood a lot of what they were saying. They didn't speak German. My mama didn't speak German, but they understood a lot of what they were saying. Huh. But they actually came from Germany and settled here in this area. So,
how much of that German heritage still prevails in West Side culture, if you will?
Oh, well, we're the most conservative German community in the United States sometimes, I think. You know, I love American Express credit cards in Evansville, Indiana, especially that side of town. Most people don't even take an American Express, and I always go, oh, that's right, I'm home. No, I think there's still a lot of that heritage here, and I think people still depend on a lot of the things that were passed down from their parents, you know, the ways of doing things, some of the celebrations that they have, you know, like the Fall Festival. I was in Tennessee doing a library program, and this lady said, oh, I can hardly wait. I can just hardly wait. I take a week's vacation every year to come home for the Fall Festival, and now I take my children.
Well, Mary Jo, thank you so much for coming in.
Well, you're just very welcome.
That was storyteller and shameless West Sider, Mary Jo Huff. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll hear about what's going on with Franklin Street this weekend.
Well, you play that tarantella, all the hounds will start to roar. The boys all go to hell and then Cubans at the floor.
Mix yourself a hurricane and stick around. Amy Word, owner of Lamasco's Bar and president of Franklin Street Events Associate, will join us to talk about how Franklin Street is preparing for the crowds at this year's Mardi Gras, Craw and Pub.
Deal out jacks are better on a blanket by the stairs. I tell you all my secrets, but I lie about my past. And send me off to bed forevermore. Make sure they play my theme song. I guess daisies I have to do. Just get me to New Orleans and paint shadows on the pews. Turn the spit on that pig and kick the drum and let me down. Put my clarinet beneath your bed till I get back in town.
We're getting you warmed up for the weekend on today's trend. That was Tom Waits. Coming up next, we're going to hear from Amy Word. She stopped by to talk about how Franklin Street is preparing for this year's Mardi Gras celebration. Last year, the businesses ran out of beer. But it sounds like they've shored up enough in their cellars to prepare for crowds this year. So let's take a listen to that and hear what she has to say.
I'm with Amy Word, president of Franklin Street Events Association and owner of Lamasco Bar.
Welcome back to the program.
I'm glad to be back. It's good to see you again.
Well, it's good to see you too. You're about to host probably, it's not the biggest event in Evansville, we know that, but probably close to second.
Yes, maybe the biggest party.
There's a lot riding on your shoulders. How are you doing?
Doing wonderful, doing good. It's when you get close to the event actually being there, there's just, you know, so much excitement and nervousness and all these different things, but ultimately, you know, we lay the plans well, and we're just excited to see the outcome.
Oh my goodness. Well, what outcome are you anticipating? How many people are let's start this way. Okay. Last year the bars ran out of beer. Is that going to happen again?
No, it's not going to happen this year. You should see we're all like little squirrels down in our basements, you know, cuz some of those great places on Franklin Street have these amazing cellars. And we've all squirreled away our little nest egg of beer. So we will not run out of beer on Franklin Street for this event this year.
We've been hoarding up beer for this event.
We do. There is lots of it's a gold mine in the basements on Franklin Street right now.
Uh-huh. Well, and I understand you had a shipment of crawfish as well.
We did. We had a missing Kenny Parkman we couldn't find for a bit on Tuesday night or Monday night coming in. We had 1,000 pounds of crawfish and about 500 pounds of oysters.
And this was just Lamasco.
This is just Lamasco's.
Oh,
yes.
My gosh.
It's just our amount that we have in.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's a lot of critters.
That's a lot.
It is. And they're all alive. So it is even kind of crazier. So there's thousands, tens of thousands literally of crawfish that are in our coolers at the bar.
Well, so for a Mardi Gras crawl this time around, lessons learned from last year, aside from the beer, what?
Porta potties. Yes, that was one of those details, you know, throwing a first time event. Uh-huh. Last year, we had not thought that went through all the way. So there's a lot of people drinking on a street need more than just the potties that are inside the bars. So There are lots of porta potties on the street this year. We've got recycling bins set up, which we didn't have last year as well. In fact, there's little trolley stations that will have porta potties, recycling bins, trash cans, and a nice area for people to wait for when the trolley comes through. So just those small little details, which can end up being a big detail when you have that many people that are somewhere.
I've noticed, I wasn't here this time last year, but the hype is incredible. I mean, I've been scanning different channels on the radio, on television, and not even just advertising, but people are talking about it like, oh, yeah, obviously this is an Evansville event. This is the top one of the year.
And that's wonderful. I'm glad that's happening.
Well, was it like that last year?
It was. We had some coverage last year, but you have to remember at that point, the FSEA mm-hmm. was 6 weeks old. We were a brand new organization that nobody knew anything about. We had just, you know, our Facebook page was 5 weeks old at that point. So they're just, you know, at this point we've got, you know, we've reached that kind of critical mass in media, if you will, that it just kind of starts to take on a life of its own in a way. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happened with this, which is wonderful. That's what we want, you know, we want Mardi Gras and Franklin Street to become synonymous in Evansville, that when people think of one, they think of the other.
Mm. What is it like to see that happen, to see something you've created walk on its own?
For me, you know, when you're an entrepreneur and you kind of have a creative spirit, to see what in your head that you envision to happen, mm-hmm. it's wonderful. And that's, you know, people ask, why do you do this? What is your impetus to do this? Why do you do this? And for me, it's that moment when you sit there and you see thousands of people in your community that have come together, you know, whether last Saturday at the Gumbo Cook-Off, whether it's for a great cause, mm-hmm. Or something like this that's just, you know, all about fun, or the parade that's on Saturday. It is to see everyone there and see community happening, and knowing that truly one person getting more people together, putting a fabulous team together, can make things happen. Mm-hmm. It is great to see that.
In the short time I've been here, I've met a lot of dreamers in this town. They want to see things happen like this. And John Gibson, for this program, he interviewed Philip Hooper about marketing different cultural districts.
Sure. I love Philip.
So, you know, I'm sure other neighborhoods, maybe other civic leaders in the community, they want to know your secret. Is it because you have a West Side following, that critical mass, people who stick to their guns and support something in that community? Or is there something going on elsewhere that...
You know, I think that is a big part of it. You know, they're the funniest. I love our West Side group and our team that's there, and all the businesses that are on Franklin Street. And it's one of those things, once you get in, you are there for life. They are your friends forever. They're the most loyal patrons. They're the most loyal friends. They're the most loyal businesses. I mean, that really is, I think that's kind of, you know, when you think of West Side, that is, you know, I think a lot of people would use those adjectives to describe it. You know, I think ultimately it's I'm a cheerleader. That's my number one role, and I'm good at that. And I think sometimes having a person that's just, you know, go, 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 go Franklin Street, go, you know, that helps. And I think there's definitely a little bit of magic that kind of occurs with all of it that makes it all happen. And, you know, you put all those ingredients together, and it just, this thing kind of has taken on a life on its own.
It really has. And I've heard that from people young and old on all parts of town. It really has been a testament. I remember meeting you over the summer, and, you know, now I get it. Now I get it. You're listening to The Trend on 88.3 FM and streaming online, WNIN.org. I'm Cass Harrington, talking to President of the Franklin Street Events Association, Amy Word. Coming up in our interview, we're going to talk about certain interactions the organization has had with city government, talking about the sign ordinance, changes with the smoking ban, and the branding of cultural districts in town. You don't want to miss it. Stick around, grab that hurricane, and stay with me.
I show you a great time. All your dreams will come true with me by your side. So come with me to New Orleans. What a city you will see. All your dreams will come true.
Last time we talked, you were applying for 501c3 status.
Yes. It's all finished and
all
complete.
All worked out.
Yep, we got all that
so
done.
So how has that helped you in any way? Or?
Oh, not really. That's just a piece that had to be finished to be, you know, for us to move forward what we needed to do. And Tim Audie, he's fantastic. He did all of Franklin Street Works. And he does quite a lot of 501c3s for Evansville. Uh-huh. He's on the east side. He's great.
Awesome. Well, and you mentioned that the CVB gave you a grant for the Mardi Gras crawl,
yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
So it seems like there are different initiatives coming in and out helping you.
Oh, absolutely. And with the big announcement that the mayor made on Monday with the cultural districts and mm-hmm. having Philip in, speaking to him on that is going to be a great component, kind of really tying, you know, these wonderful pieces together that we have in Evansville and being able to market them in a beautiful way, being able to have... you know, once you have a map in front of you, if you will, because that's literally what it's kind of doing is putting a map there for us, it allows all these creative things and these ideas to have happen to make all of these different components come seamlessly together to make mm-hmm. a really beautiful thing for Evansville.
Hmm. Well, and I'm sure there were bumps along the way. I remember like the sign ordinance
yes.
this past year. Did that get resolved? What
it
happened
did.
For
they
the
did.
Listeners?
They actually, yeah, go ahead.
For the listeners who may not know, it happened because there was a sign on the sidewalk outside of some bars on Franklin.
There were and some other multiple things. There were some award signage that were out that the CNP had issued for
Courier and Press Readers
and Press,
Choice.
Yeah, Readers Choice Awards. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it was great. It was one of those fine examples of where the ordinances were old. They'd been written in the 40s and 50s. They are not applicable to today's what we're trying to do with Franklin Street, making it a walkable community mm-hmm. That it's, you know, pedestrian. A lot of those were written when we were sprawling east, and so that's what was in mind when they wrote those. And so it was one of those things that the mayor looked at it, city council looked at it, said these are not fitting our needs anymore, we need to change these. And they immediately put a little group together and got that done. So it was nice to see that. And I think it's like with anything, even, you know, with we were going back to with Franklin Street, once one thing happens and people see, wow, this really can work, like we can make this all happen together, I think once you see that in action, that it makes it so much easier to move forward and do things like that in the future. Uh-huh. And I think we'll see a lot more things, whether it's parking spaces that are needed for businesses or signage needs or you know, making like Franklin Street and being able to have housing above all of our businesses down there. Any of those kinds of rules
and ordinances.
Is
that in discussions right now?
Yeah, because that's actually one of the things right now. It is not zoned to be able to have residential units above Franklin Street.
Huh.
Yeah, and so, you know, simple things like that, that definitely to change what we need to have, you know, have done. And yeah. again, it's left over from a long time ago that it wasn't applicable, and now and, we need to and, go back and revisit
and urban,
those things.
Urban lofts weren't a thing, possibly.
Yes, exactly, they weren't. And now, you know, that is a new thing, you uh-huh. know, that will eventually be, you know, young kids, that's where, you know, if you're a young professional, I'd want to live, you know, above someplace on Franklin Street, without a doubt.
Yeah, it would be like Cheers, living above a bar.
Yes, it would be, exactly.
So, wow. Well, what about another thing on people's minds, the smoking ban? Has Franklin Street rallied together? Is there a cohesive group of bars that is determined to stay non-smoking?
We did the entire street, and not together. This was not a decision we made together, but ultimately everyone did decide to remain non-smoking.
Everyone.
Yes, and it's really unbelievable. And I tease that most people not use the word progressive to describe Franklin Street, but huh. so many of the things that we are doing are very, it's progressive for us. Huh. And it's, you know, it's kind of laughable because no one would ever have thought to call Franklin Street or the West Side progressive. And so it's nice to see that, you know, something as simple as that we all decided to remain smoke-free.
Huh. Well, and I have to ask, after that smoking ban was reversed, did you see more patrons coming into Lamasco's?
Oh, we did. And I knew it was, and I, even there's a few places that had originally said they were going to go smoking that have mm-hmm. gone back. And it's, again, it's so much of our narrative here that we need to see it to believe it. And I think 3 years ago when it went in and everyone, none of us would have decided, I think, on our own at that point to do it. But mm-hmm. then once everyone saw it, I said, you know, this really is not that such a big deal. You know, it's kind of an easy thing, and this really is what we want. Mm-hmm. I think it's been an easy choice since then.
You mentioned the one thing that you would like to see of many, many things, you know, is just more investment in buildings that are not used right now.
Yes.
Which, you know, right now, yeah. What about a grocery store or a hair salon, a yoga studio? What do you think it will take to get someone to put down that confidence, that investment into a building?
It's already happening.
Is it?
Yes, it is. Even just this past year, even since we spoke last, the number of businesses that have opened, the numbers that I know are coming this year already, uh-huh. yet to come. I think one of the best successes, and I just absolutely adore the girls down there, but Time in the Kitchen, mm-hmm. The new store that opened. In fact, they have their grand opening, I believe, is just in a few weeks, and it's Time in the Kitchen for the listeners out there.
And they already won a gumbo award.
They did. They won the best business gumbo on the street for the gumbo cook-off. They're doing fantastic, and it is wonderful to see, you know, how busy they are. They're doing some amazing things. They have cooking classes every week that are going on. They have a big kitchen in the back. You can come in. Let's say you want to have a dinner, or your 17-year-old wants to have a party and learn how to make sushi. You can go in, and they can teach you. I mean, it's fascinating, all the stuff that they're doing. Huh. In Lamasco, we're actually helping serve some of the alcohol tastings at some of those events. There's some great partnerships that are happening on the street. And so just to see their success for me is, again, one of those things that I just, you know, you stand there and just beam in pride for them and, you know, all the things that are happening on our street. And once people will see those success and they'll go, you know, I don't need to go east to make this work. I don't need to go, you know, in a strip mall someplace out. I can come here and my business can be successful. And I think when you see more stories like that, it's like anything else, you know, the kind of the proof is in the pudding that once they see it, you know, it's there, they're going to want to do that.
Wow. Well, if the gumbo cook-off, which sold out of wristbands within 2 hours,
yes.
is what I heard.
Yes.
That's an indication of how this weekend will go. I think you're on the right track.
I think so, too. It's time to let the good times roll.
And get Lamasco.
Yes, absolutely. And get Lamasco'd.
No, okay. Well, my last question. What does all of this mean to you at this point?
You know, for me, like, it's just such a sense of pride in our community to see everyone coming together. I think it's wonderful that, you know, when I have this philosophy that, you know, businesses can work together, even businesses that are doing the same kind of selling the same product. You know, we're all restaurants selling alcohol, that we can work together, that realizing that our voices together are much louder than our single voices alone, that we can, that truly people just coming together and deciding act can make changes in their community. And I know, you know, people, they constantly say, you know, one person can't make a difference, or, you know, a small handful of people can't make a difference. Ultimately, that's the only thing that can make a difference, is just deciding to act and to do. And for me to see that philosophy is applicable, it works in real life. You know, I see it every day on our street. It's wonderful for me. It really is. It's a beautiful thing.
Awesome. Well, it's a beautiful thing to have you here.
I'm glad to be back.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That was Amy Word, president of Franklin Street Events Association and owner of Lamasco's Bar. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, the final segment of today's trend on Franklin Street.
As they say in New Orleans, who that? Why, it's Philip Hooper, the director of Metropolitan Development, coming up next. He'll tell us about the city's plans to market the 5 cultural districts in Evansville, which includes Franklin Street.
Pas même qui une patate de graton.
As my lovely friend Mallory Klum just teased, we're going to hear from Philip Hooper next. He is the director of Metropolitan Development for the city of Evansville, and the city has launched a task force for cultural development. So the group is focusing on 5 cultural districts in the city, which includes North Main, downtown Evansville, the Arts District, the University of Evansville area, and West Franklin Street, which is the focus of our program today. So my friend John Gibson caught up with Philip. Let's hear what he had to say.
The mayor's task force for cultural development will oversee fundraising and development in the cultural districts, act as a steering committee to increase the cultural value and the understanding of Evansville as recognized by residents and also recognized by out-of-town visitors. And, you know, this will also assist in employers and folks like the Growth Alliance and selling the quality of life to potential employers. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll help employers directly sell Evansville to potential hires, help universities sell Evansville to potential students, and to really celebrate our local assets that are the kinds of things that you can't get anywhere else. Mm-hmm. that are uniquely Evansville.
Now, how were these 5 cultural districts decided?
There was a lot of discussion over the last, really since 2012, with myself and the Community Foundation, who's been a huge partner and supporter of this, about the Indiana Arts Commission's Cultural Districts Program, and looking at the Indiana Arts Commission's Cultural Districts Program, mm-hmm. These 5 really settle to the top pretty clearly. If you look for areas of town where there are urban corridors with mixed use developments, there are these nodes of town that have a high concentration of local restaurants, local breweries, and things that carry with them statewide cultural tourism significance, like Bossy Field, for example, mm-hmm. or a top 10 theater program in the United States, et cetera. Those kinds of cultural assets, when they're when they exist in a corridor in a dense area, mm-hmm. There's a very common way, a growing way in cities across the country to work with a program similar to the Indiana Main Street Management Program, the Main Street model, to work among those corridors to promote the businesses in those corridors and to further development, fundraising activities for events, and then coordination between the corridors. You know, what's good for West Franklin Street is good for the Art District and it's good for North Main Street, as those areas are increasingly destinations also.
Yeah. Now, I understand you did receive some state funding to help get this effort started. Is that right?
We received a 60-hour consultancy grant from the Indiana Arts Commission. So they are providing a consultant that will begin working with us and these 5 districts over the next 6 months to do some strategic action planning and create asset maps and develop logos and signage and marketing materials for each district.
Now, one of the five districts is West Franklin Street. We're sort of focusing on that this week. For decades, a lot of Evansville area residents only visited West Franklin during the Fall Festival and not so much during the other 51 weeks of the year. How is that changing?
I think it's changing by the hard work of businesses on West Franklin Street, existing businesses and new businesses who are coming together in new ways to make events and activities happen. And it's also maybe a sign of the times with the increasing interest in urban areas across the country. Folks across the age spectrum, sometimes it just gets told as a story of millennials being interested in the city. Mm-hmm. And that's not the whole story. Baby boomers are increasingly interested in the city as well, as it provides walkability and an atmosphere where there's a healthier lifestyle is easier to attain when there's an area that's able to be walked in terms of having beautiful infrastructure and boulevards and sidewalks and the riverfront esplanade to walk on. But there's also things to walk to. And in West Franklin Street, you've got that. I think West Franklin Street is the healthiest urban neighborhood corridor in the state of Indiana. I absolutely believe that. And it is a corridor that's not propped up with mommy and daddy's credit cards, as happens in college towns, so to speak, right? You certainly have Kirkwood Avenue and Broad Ripple and other college town-type environments that receive a huge stimulus from students with the unique sort of financial aspect of college life. Uh-huh. In this case, Franklin Street has a locally owned men's clothing store that's been in existence since the 60s. It has a locally owned men's shoe store. It has another apparel store. It has insurance companies and a chiropractor and a dentist. And you know, there's an adage on the West Side that I've heard that is, if you can't buy it on West Franklin Street, you don't need it. And while that's obviously a bit hyperbole, it's a fun phrase. And the health of the business diversity on West Franklin Street really does throw people from Indianapolis, from Pittsburgh, from St. Louis, from Louisville for a loop, because it is very, very rare in Indiana and in America's industrial legacy cities to have a neighborhood that's a mile or two out of the downtown core that still has the business vitality that West Franklin has.
Right.
And there are neighborhoods in Indianapolis that would do cartwheels backwards and weep tears of joy if they had never lost the businesses that West Franklin Street still has. So
right.
it's a great anomaly of American urban neighborhood corridors, and it's something that absolutely needs to be celebrated and supported to make sure that in 10 to 20 years it's headed in the right direction and not the wrong direction, as has happened to a lot of urban corridors across the country.
Yeah, you saw, it's got a real combination, doesn't it, of retail, food, entertainment, more of a, you know, more variety maybe than a lot of other neighborhoods in the city, right?
Yeah, it's like I say, I think it's the healthiest urban neighborhood corridor in the state of Indiana. I think you could take that to the bank.
And we've certainly seen, as you say, a lot of existing businesses there that have been there for decades, but yep. Also some new stuff moving in. I know, obviously, the Tin Man, PG, Lamasco is very popular these days, the Lamasco Bar and Grill.
Yeah, Time in the Kitchen is another great new place that's popped up in the last 12 months.
Right.
You know, there's a lot happening.
Yeah. All right. Well, Phil, anything else to add that we haven't touched on here about West Franklin Street or the new task force?
You know, we just stay tuned. There will be more strategy sessions in each of these districts, similar to what has been done recently in Haney's Corner to arrive at a new logo and develop some new market materials and YouTube videos, et cetera. And so stay tuned. The next 6 months are going to be an exciting time of collaboration and synergy for these five unique areas of Evansville.
That was Philip Hooper, Director of Metropolitan Development, talking about branding the five cultural districts in Evansville. We're going to take one more quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about that gumbo recipe that won last weekend. Stick around.
Listening to and streaming online at WNIN.org. What's a good Fat Tuesday celebration without food? Host Cass Harrington is going to chat with Thyme in the Kitchen's Chef April Bakey about her first place gumbo recipe. Stay with us. Finally, on today's trend, this is the last segment, we're going to take a look at Thyme in the Kitchen, which has gotten several mentions on this program from Amy Word and Philip Hooper. It's the new business on West Franklin, but don't call them inexperienced. They won first place in the gumbo cook-off last weekend, and I'm joined by the mastermind, Chef April Bakey. You pulled it off.
I did, and I'm shocked, actually. It was an amazing win, and we're thrilled.
You're shocked?
I'm shocked, yeah. We're new on the street, and so I really thought some of the groups that had been there for a long time would take it. So we were thrilled and surprised.
Huh. Well, tell me. Okay, we know what goes into a gumbo, roughly. A good roux is the weird place to start. But what
Correct.
What exactly is gumbo?
Gumbo is, it can be a mix. Traditionally, gumbo is a seafood gumbo, or also they have one that is shrimp and chicken, or chicken and sausage. It's kind of a hosh-posh of okra and veggies, and it's a heartier soup.
And there's kind of different iterations of it all around the world, different, like in Spain, you have paella, and but I happen to love gumbo. So how did you pull yours off that it just wowed all the judges and all the people on Franklin Street last weekend?
I like to be different. I don't like to do what everybody else does. So I researched a bunch of recipes and just picked and pulled ingredients out of those that I thought would be fun and interesting. I wanted to keep a mix of traditional with a little heat, but not enough to light people on fire and make them miserable. Mm-hmm. But then add some little twist onto it, which is where we came up with the gator tail.
Oh, you threw gator tail in there.
I did, yeah. And in addition to putting gator tail in it, I dredged it in Thyme in the Kitchen Salt Sisters Dragon's Breath Rub and flour, and then fried it.
Wait. Dragon's Breath Rub?
Yes, it's fantastic. Yeah.
What is that?
It's a rub mixture. It's got several herbs and spices and peppers in it. And I added that to flour and put that on the gator and then fried it.
Had you cooked gator before?
I had, yeah.
How does one cook gator? Is it like similar to chicken?
It's similar. It's dense meat. It gets chewy. And to prevent the chewy, I fried it, which I thought would be unique and different and kind of fun. So I like to be fun and funky.
Well, and I imagine if you fry it, people on the West Side will like it.
It's Fall Festival Street. Yes, it's Franklin Street. You should fry it and see what happens.
That's right. Well, so I understand you are actually leasing the kitchen in the back of Thyme in the Kitchen.
Correct. Yes.
And actually, the business hasn't even had its official opening yet.
No, it hasn't. Culinary Innovations is my catering company, and I'm leasing space and Thyme in the Kitchen, and we're doing our grand opening April the 11th and 12th.
So, but you've been operating since December.
We moved in December.
Wow.
Of 2013.
Yeah. What's it been like?
It's been amazing, fantastic. Franklin Street's where Marsha and I both wanted to be.
And Marsha's the owner.
Marsha's the owner of Thyme in the Kitchen, her and Gil Yockum. And that's where we both wanted to be. And it's just been, it's been a dream come true, honestly, for both businesses.
Why did they decide on West Franklin? You know, this could have worked. I mean, they could have been on the east side. It could have been downtown. What was the draw with Franklin Street?
Marsha, Gil, and I are all from the west side, grew up on the west side.
There you go.
My grandfather was a nut clubber, so I spent a lot of time on Franklin Street. I've got a lot of fantastic memories down there. It's always, it's just always been a fun, philanthropic street that I loved growing up. It's always a good, warm, fun feeling, and that's just where I wanted to be. And Gil and Marsha were the same way. Just really loved the street and wanted to see the growth. We were excited about everything the Events Association's doing and how there's a real community down there of businesses who want to see each other succeed and support from the West Side for it. So made sense.
So the Franklin Street Events Association, that was kind of a bolster that
like an insurance that you knew you had support?
It certainly was a plus, because there was definitely a sense of wanting the businesses down there to succeed and wanting each other to grow and be a family. And that's, I think that event association has helped that.
Well, one of the things that Amy and I talked about was getting people to take that initial step to put down an investment in a vacant building. Mm-hmm. What does it take to do that? How did you select this site, and how much commitment did you have to put into it to open the doors?
Marcia and Gil actually own the building at 2308 West Franklin. And Marcia and I, as a group, we had looked at probably every vacant building on Franklin over the last couple of years, because that's where we wanted to be. And this one came up for auction. She called one day and said, "I think I'm going to look at this building. Am I crazy? If it went through, would you be willing to lease space out of it and put your catering company in it?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely. Let's do that. That sounds like an amazing opportunity." And so she looked at it, and her and Gil decided it was the perfect space for what they needed in space and what I needed. And they pulled the trigger and did it.
Sounds like just a dream.
It absolutely has been a dream. It's been a total dream and an absolute blessing to be down there and to be part of their family. Huh. Yeah.
So the reception, you've been having customers come in and you're teaching classes, I'm assuming. Yeah. What sorts of classes are you teaching?
We did a all chocolate class for Valentine's Day, which was fun. It had cocoa in every recipe. We've done date nights, steak date nights. We've done girls' night out events, kids' friendly events. We did a snowman breakfast, which was a blast. A bunch of little powdered sugar covered kids in the kitchen, which was fun.
Cute.
Yeah, it's been the reception's been fantastic. The community's been really good about supporting both businesses.
Well, what do you see? What role are you filling on Franklin Street? Obviously, it's a niche that hasn't been covered yet. Right. At least, I mean, I imagine it's a positive thing that you don't have much competition in many kitchens giving classes. But what do you see yourself as doing something for that part of the community?
We do. There's not another kitchen store in Evansville that offers both unique kitchen and home items in addition to cooking classes. And then we can also offer catering and event space for small groups to come in and do team building or, just a fun night out or a fun shower and that sort of thing. So I think it is filling a niche, because there's not a lot of that type of business in Evansville and really on the west side at all. So it's just, I think it's filling a good niche and people are liking it. The reception's been great.
All right. Well, April, thanks for stopping by
Thank
the trend.
You.
And we're going to get your secret gumbo recipe. She laughs.
Yeah, maybe not all the components, but yeah, it's a secret.
Well, that's April Bakey. She's the chef behind Time in the Kitchen. She owns Culinary Innovations, a catering company. We're wrapping up the trend today, visiting Franklin Street. The Trend is a production of WNIN in collaboration with the Evansville Courier and Press. This episode was produced by myself with help from my co-host John Gibson. And Mallory Klum engineered today's program. The theme music was written by Jeffrey Osman. I'm Cass Harrington. This is WNIN FM, Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro.